Hi folks, Barry here. Just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with our guest Mark Thomas, all about the world's worst political party. A little bit of housekeeping from me. First of all, this episode is just great. British listeners might know Mark Thomas if you've not heard of him. Brilliant political comedian, campaigner, advocate. He went viral recently. You may have seen on Twitter with a video giving a graduation speech at a university where he ripped into the Tory government here in the UK. He's one of those people who was just constantly angry but hopeful, and it was great to spend time with him. Ben and I, we recorded it on the day when we were all being told to stay indoors and not travel in the UK because it was so hot. It got up to nearly 40 degrees that day. It got to 40 degrees the following day, and this country isn't really built for that sort of weather. But nevertheless, Ben collected me in his lovely air-conditioned car, and we drove over to Mark's, and we gathered in a dark room around the microphones. And Mark is one of those people who you just sort of have to wind up and let him go, as I think you'll hear in this episode. He does most of the talking, and we recorded for about 45 minutes beyond what is in this episode. We recorded so much stuff that didn't end up in the episode purely for time constraints. But if you want to hear some of the extra stuff, there's about 20 or 25 minutes of bonus content going to be on our Patreon. So if you visit patreon.com/worstfootforward, if you're a Patreoner already, well, that stuff will appear. If you haven't donated to us on Patreon, well, chuck us a few quid and you'd be able to get that bonus info, which is just packed with anecdotes from Mark's life and stories. And you'll be helping us to keep the lights on here at Worst Foot Forward as well. There's also stuff going up there each month. We're putting up monthly attempts at world records. This month I try and get an egg to balance on its end. And also you'll be helping pay Ben and I as we've just both finished our first drafts of our third and fourth chapters of a Worst Foot Forward book, which is about a third of the book, to be honest. That will be going to publishers in September, in the hope that one of them will want to do something with it. And with us, our Patreoners will also get a little bit of a sneak preview of some of the stuff we've written as well. So lots of reasons for you to go to Patreon and help us out. We really appreciate the people who already do. And if you're able to spare a little bit of your hard-earned moolah and pay Ben and I to keep doing this and all the other stuff that we do as well, we would be so grateful. And like I said, there's loads of extra stuff, including, like I said, bonus content from this episode. And in the episode itself, we get quite deep. There's a lot of chat about why politics is the way it is and our hopes for a better future and all of those things, as well as the usual jokes and trivia and nonsense as well. So we hope you enjoy that. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Don't know what that is yet. We've a couple of recordings we're just trying to arrange. In the meantime, if you want to support the podcast in other ways, give us a shout out online. At Worstfoot is the handle on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to chat to like-minded Worst Foot Forward fans in your area and in other areas, hop on our Discord. The link is in the description to the podcast. There's a lovely little chattery community there who I imagine after hearing who wins this episode, there might be a few champagne corks popping because guys, they've been trying, they've been knocking at the door multiple times down the years on Worst Foot Forward. And finally, this lot get a victory. I'm sure you'll be as pleased for them as we are. Enjoy this week's episode and chat to you soon. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And this week, we're chatting about the world's worst political party. But then again, in this day and age, do politicians even know what a party is anymore? Does there need to be cake? If we're having it outside, does it count? Could playing ABBA Gold be interpreted as simply consulting with the cabinet? This confusion, my friends, is why I stand here before you today and offer a back-to-basics approach to parties. You want to know what my platform is? Well, it's less of a platform and more of a tier. Several tiers. It's more of a tiered wedding cake, but it is from Sainsbury's Basics range, in line with our Back to Basics slogan. Our party will operate solely outdoors. It's more of a grassroots movement than a party, really, mainly because it'll operate mainly on grass, a lawn, really. It's more of a barbecue than a party. But rest assured that the sausages will be from Sainsbury's Basic range. And of course, we will assemble a cabinet of all the talents, with the four great offices of state entrusted to the finest Swedish pop quartet in history.
Benny as Foreign Secretary, Agnetha as Chancellor, Bjorn as Home Secretary, and Anna Frieda as the Prime Minister, and therefore doing none of the heavy lifting, as usual, with the rest of the cabinet filled out by the holograms from ABBA's new live show, and a few cashiers from our local Sainsbury's, who, let's be honest, will be more fiscally capable than any of the current government and would know that stuffing a box of wine, some vol-au-vents, and a handful of Twiglets into a ministerial red box doesn't suddenly transform your party into political business. So, while we all put our heads together and determine whether this is a political party at all, in a formal gathering or just a big old shindig, please welcome the deputy to my leader, the lords to my common, and the vice to my nipple. Sorry, president. Wrong kind of party. It's Ben Vandeveld.
Thank you, my honourable friend.
I had nothing honourable about me.
You read that introduction like an American voiceover on a pharmaceutical advert reading the terms and conditions.
We've got a lot to get through today.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
We're talking about the world's worst political party, and in the dying embers of democracy, I feel like this might be the longest podcast recording we'll ever do.
There's a strong chance as we go through almost every single one in history.
Not only that, but we are recording this, British listeners will be aware, on that Monday when we were all told to stay indoors and do very little work at all. So our brains might melt within 20 minutes of this episode starting.
Yeah, we're recording this indoors because of the inaction of countless decades of political parties to deal with literally the biggest burning elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I was, obviously, because we've got different political backgrounds, because I've grown up in Britain, you grew up in Ireland, so, you know, you grew up in a vaguely functioning political system with a difficult to understand but actually effective electoral system, whereas we just have who gets the biggest stick and shouts the loudest wins.
Yeah. I mean, we're blessed with proportional representation in Ireland, which means you get a range of opinions being represented in Parliament. For the majority of the last 100 years, that range of opinion was very much the Catholic right, but we're beginning to break that down a little bit.
And so, because I know nothing about Irish politics, like every British citizen for the past 300 years.
Yeah, a lot could have been solved by that being dealt with at school level rather than now.
And so who do you normally vote for?
Back home, yeah. The Green Party. I come from rural farming area. They are never getting a seat where I'm from.
Fine. So, rural farming, it's either going to be Green Party or right wing.
The two big parties in Ireland for the last 100 years were Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And basically it was, which side of the argument were you on when we split with the United Kingdom? Were you on the side that signed the treaty, or were you on the side that thought we should go further and keep fighting? That was literally families split along that line and tribally keep voting for that without any sort of, what about the policies for now, rather than what you've been voting for the last 50 years. But that's beginning to be disrupted. The next election, Sinn Féin might well be the biggest party. Socialist Marxist former paramilitaries. We're going to be like Colombia. It's going to be great.
Oh, it's going to be some spicy cold cannon.
It's going to be some spicy, very spicy cold cannon. Darkly funded cold cannon.
Well, that's Ireland sorted. Let's see if we can get onto the rest of the world. But first, we must introduce our guest. Our guest this week is a comedian, writer, activist, rabble-rouser, Wimbledon ultra, and ridiculously hard-working hive of comic energy and campaigning verve. His CV is too large, too varied, and in places too implausibly mental for a podcast intro. Never mind a podcast. He will be well known to our British listeners as a constantly hilarious and well-researched thorn in the side of the political and corporate establishment, whether establishing gun-running after-school clubs, hijacking buses full of arms dealers, or setting up the Church of the Holy Kazoo with this idiot. For our non-British listeners, he has a decades-long reputation enhanced from standing up to the likes of Nestle, Coca-Cola, and other sugar fiends. And that's before we get to his shows about the miners' strike, walking the infamous wall in Israel-Palestine, and his father's love of opera. It's properly lovely to welcome to the show a man who, along with Eddie Izzard, Spike Milligan, Victoria Wood, and my mate Gavin, my mum blames for me becoming a stand-up comedian. It's Mark Thomas.
Hello, my darling.
Hello, pal.
This is great. That was a lovely intro. Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Very welcome.
I mean, I enjoyed that.
You've got such a potpourri of protests and you know, political disruption and comedy. The gun running after school clubs.
That was quite a thing. That was really interesting. It was also a sort of legal minefield that you have to step through very, very carefully. But it was, I think one of my favourite things was we were working in this lovely Irish girls' school, and their nun because there's always one there. Yeah. And the nun was running the amnesty group and actually said, yeah, yeah, we'll do this project with you. And so we basically showed them how to become arms dealers, and they started getting torture equipment sent to Ireland across the world, right? And of course, the Irish government is saying, no, no, we're going to tie, we've got the tightest loopholes. And they went into Parliament and presented it, and it was just like, whoa, that was bloody great.
We're pretty expert at running guns into Ireland.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have got some history there.
Yeah.
But it was what was great about working in a teaching environment, because it was sort of essentially a teaching environment, is actually you just have to go to basics and just go, why do we do this? Why is this important? Why is this relevant? And that's always a good thing to do.
Well, it's good. I feel like loads of the stuff that you do and loads of campaigners do, you could boil it down so you're talking to 8-year-olds and go, this is why this is important. And they get the joke and they get why you're doing what you're doing. And I feel like we need another intervention with kids at the age of 14 to 16 so they don't stray from the path and start making terrible political decisions.
Well, my lovely mate, Attila the stockbroker, who, yeah. Do you know Attila? He's just
I've not met him, but I know his
work. Mate, he's great. For those of you who don't know him, he's an amazing ranting poet, and he was one of the first ranting poets. He kind of came shortly after John Cooper Clarke. I got sent a picture of me. It happened in 2009. Of me and a lovely comic called Will Hodgson and Attila the Stockbroker performing a benefit for refugees and asylum seekers in a squatted MP's second home. And I thought, you know, I remember standing there on stage thinking, some people go, why don't you do the adverts? And then you go, well, this is why.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably more fun as well as being more worthy.
I tell you what, this is what happened, right? Years ago when I moved into a house and my dad was a builder. So I got it was an old place in Brixton that had bomb damage and all this and never been repaired. And it was just kind of, so my dad came in to build it. I got a phone call and his voice was like, is that Mark Thomas? I said, yeah. And they said, this is so. So we're phoning up to see if you're interested in auditioning for the Heineken Carlsberg or Heineken, one of those beer adverts. I said, no, thank you, I don't drink. And they said, no, you wouldn't have to actually drink anything. You wouldn't have to drink alcohol. I said, no, I don't drink. You know, I have a problem with drink, I don't drink. And they said, well, no, you wouldn't have to drink it. We put something else in it. I said, okay, I don't do adverts. And they said, I said, okay, let me ask you this. How much is it worth? It's worth £75,000 with the repeats and residuals and all this kind of stuff. There's 6 adverts, da, 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 da. And this was 30 years ago, right? £75,000. I said, well, this is the best no I've ever said.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I started laughing, put the phone down. My dad pokes his head around the door and he goes, what are you laughing at? And I said, I've just turned down £75,000 to advertise beer. He went, you cunt.
Yeah.
This is what I love, is people like Attila. They've always sort of been there. They're always fantastically active. And there's something brilliant about when you see someone who really goes for it being stuck into the roots of the community. As you can see, I'm wearing, well, the listeners can't see, but I'm wearing the new AFC Wimbledon top, which was released on Saturday, and I went to the shop at 11 o'clock in the morning to get, right? What I love about AFC Wimbledon is the fact 20 odd years ago, our club was sold. It's literally 9 minutes walk from here. They sold the ground to property developers, turned it into flats, and then they moved the club to Milton Keynes to franchise the football 50 miles away.
For our American listeners, the idea of just moving the franchise to a different city seems more normal. It is not the norm.
Oh, it is definitely not the norm. And what happened was a group of lefties actually started up, just in the area, who were big Wimbledon fans, said, no, we won't have this. We won't have it. We'll set our own club up. Local football, local people, blah, blah, blah. So they set up AFC Wimbledon. And in fact, me, Kevin Day, Mark Steele, Terry Alton and Mark Watson did the first fundraising gig for AFC Wimbledon. We did the Don's Trust at Wimbledon Theatre. And somebody sent me a copy of the programme recently, which was just great. And in 20 years, we've gone through 7 divisions, 7 tiers of the English Football League. Last season was the first season we got our stadium in Plough Lane, which is 250 yards away from the site of the original. And what's brilliant about it, it's a fan-owned club. So the fans own it. We own that club. I'm a Don's Trust member. I'm a football club owner. Fuck you, Abramovich. I own a football club. Right? And what's amazing was last year we won the Community Club of the Year, which I'm really incredibly proud of, because we do all the food bank stuff. We do all the kind of computers for school stuff. We do sort of disability sports. We do. The women's team is great, properly embedded in the community. I was talking to a mate of mine. He's lovely. He turns up every match and he's got his long hair and beard. He always turns all right, mate. He's always got his "I still hate Thatcher" t-shirt. and I said, "You're right, mate." He goes, "Oh, I've decided to stop moaning and do something." I said, "What are you?" He said, "I'm moving furniture for pensioners once a week. That's what I'm doing now." It's part of the club, you know, that you get in there and you're part of the community. You know, even when we lose it, I was watching Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium, and we were losing 3-0, and all the Wimbledon fans are proudly singing "We Own Our Club," right? You know, and there's something brilliant about that. We also sung 7-0, Tottenham beat us 7-0, right? which is not true, but a very good chant. But yeah. That ethos, well, I go and do gigs and you get loads of Dons fans. So they're all sort of trade unionists, you know, grassroots stuff, sort of activists, all of that. But they're also, you get a load of geezers just turning up, which I adore. And it's really good. And I love the fact that actually wherever you go, you can, it's a way of talking and getting in with people. And I got into football quite late. Do you know what I mean? Because my uncles used to take me to Chelsea when I was young. I was terrified. Yeah. I was terrified. Right, my uncles were all brown leather jackets and rum and blacks. Do you know what I mean? Wait outside the pub, boy. You know, packet of crisps, pineapple juice, you know. And it was just the most terrifying thing. I've got family who are proper hooligans and have been caught being proper hooligans.
That's right. I mean, not that we're playing a game of top trumps, but I've got a first cousin who was an arms dealer to the Libyans, and it didn't end well for him.
Okay,
so
right,
we're
okay
on safe ground.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah, right.
He was a McFly, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I didn't know McFly was a Jewish name.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually short for McFlyovitz.
So yeah, so I mean, all that early football stuff, I hated. I just hated. I went. I remember once my best mate's dad taking us, and this shows how old I am. We turned up at the shed at Chelsea. He just went, "A quid? No, come on, we're going home." Yeah.
So, listen, you are brilliant at telling fantastic stories from, what's the word I'm looking for? Nostalgia. That's the word I'm after. What is it that you're worst at in the world, Mark?
I'm very bad with memory.
I cannot believe that after the stories you've just told.
No, but I'm very bad with, I'm slightly obsessive. I was thinking of actually maybe I should be going up and being diagnosed as, have I got something? Just because I know loads of comics who've got ADHD this season. So I thought, you know.
Wouldn't be on trend.
Yeah, but I'm really bad at just ordering things to get things done that need to be done. Mm-hmm. So I'll have, I was in the Wimbledon shop and somebody was selling these lovely badges, which was of the old gates, which is "Womble Till I Die." And I said, "I haven't got any money on me. I've only got a card." And he just went, "Look, just I'll send you an email with the bank details. Drop us in." And of course, I've been meaning to do that for the past 48 hours, but it's just been bottom of the list. I have a very bad way of organizing practical things that need to be, like bills. Other people just go, "Oh, well, I'll just do that today and I'll just do this and I'll clear the decks and da, da, da." And I'm like, no, there's an amazing book that I need to read.
So you're saying you need to make paying bills thrilling.
It needs to be fun. Yeah, you need to, if you set up like some sort of mousetrap style assault course for you to get to the computer to then do it.
Do you know, I think we need singing telegrams to be reintroduced, right? So that you pay it and within 24 hours, someone turns up as some sort of, you know, as a greased Metropolitan Police officer. You paid your bill. You paid your bill. You were so fabulous.
Yeah, just, you need a little bit more pizzazz to it.
Or if every time you paid a bill, they just said, "Congratulations, you've paid a bill." And then you had a fresh filmed that moment, possibly live moment, of someone just walking in and slapping Nigel Farage. Yeah. So you've paid your bill. Yes!
Just the opposite of Cameo.
Yeah!
This week, as I said, we were talking about the world's worst political party. Holy moly, there are a lot to choose from. Ben, where did you begin?
So I looked at lots and lots of joke parties. After a while, they got a bit tedious, like the Monster Raving Loony Party, but there's loads of them around the world.
Monster Raving Loony Party are all right.
Well, this is the thing that I found. A lot of the time, you will look at things in the manifesto and go, clearly a joke, a very serious policy that I would like the government to implement immediately. Yeah. So the first one I found is actually quite wholesome. This is, have either of you heard of the Polish Beer Lovers Party?
No, but they sound like a single issue party.
No, I think they apply to pale ale as well as bitter.
Are you sure it's not Polish and beer lovers? The leader is Mr. Sheen.
They ran after the fall of communism in the 1991 elections, and they actually won 16 seats in the lower house.
Whoa. Yeah. That is some serious drinking.
Because yeah. That's tens of thousands of people voting for every one of those people.
You see, that's the brilliant thing. Poland has beer drinking parties. We get UKIP and Katie Hopkins.
I mean, UKIP is the militant political wing of the Campaign for Real Ale. No illusions. So I'm going to both puncture a bit of your image of the Beer Lovers Party and then make you love them again. The reason that they gave their name was partly because you're always going to vote for that, but also because pubs are where people chat and debate. I was listening to a podcast the other day about how in both the Ottoman Empire and Restoration England, they banned coffee houses because they were places where political dissent would be fermented. So the Beer Lovers Party idea was, we need to get together to start forming a new country. Where do we do it? The pub. That's where we chat.
I think it's a brilliant thing. Yeah. And I say this as a non-drinker. What's amazing about this is if you look at, there's a great book just out, which I recommend everyone go and get, called Clubland by Pete Brown. It's an absolute piece of genius. And what he does is he said, look, you know, it was the ruling class, the rich ruling class that said, we're going to have clubs in St. James's where we can drink and do whatever we want. And they set up these rules and it's just membership. And then the working class goes, oh, them's the rules. Right, we'll have that. And that's how the working men's club started. And actually, the working men's club, you could gig and gig and gig and gig and gig, as we were saying earlier before we started recording, you could gig forever in working men's clubs. There's great stories. This is, you know, this was the political hub of a lot of work, a lot of action. And actually, that was, there's a lovely story Pete Brown told. I've forgotten the name of the comic, and I've forgotten the name of the club, but he was performing. He was about to go, we'll introduce you. And they brought the table with the pies on and put it in front of him. So he's performing behind the pies. and he said, how can I perform?
Isn't that just like the equivalent of the lectern at the...
Well, it could be said, but the comic was somewhat perturbed.
Yeah.
And said, you put... And the club chairman goes, well, where else are we going to put them? If they put them in corridor, they wouldn't know they were ready.
Oh, that's lush.
So I love the Polish beer party. You know, that's brilliant.
So they split. I'm sad to tell you, they split in 1992 into the big beer party and the little beer party. And the big beer party,
half and the pint.
Yes, exactly. Next, I went to Denmark, and in 1979, a party was founded by a chap called Jacob Haugard, who was an actor, musician, a comedian, called the Danish Union of Conscientiously Workshy Elements, and. Great stuff in his manifesto, The Right to Laziness. He argued for an 8-hour sleep.
Can I just say, that is amazing. Because on stage recently, I was just gabbing away. And you know when you get hold of something and it comes out, which I love. I love that.
It's the best feeling.
It's just, you know, you don't get to improvise enough, in my opinion. I was just performing the other day and I hit Keir Starmer and just why is he always going to make Britain fairer for hardworking people? What about the lazy bastards? What about those of us that don't care?
It's like there's a great John Lennon quote of, time you enjoyed wasting was not wasted. And that's what we need to embrace.
That's the great George Best quote. He was once asked what he did with all his money. He said, I spent it on wine, women and song, and the rest I frittered.
Lovely. A couple of other things in the Conscientiously Workshy manifesto is bigger Christmas presents and shorter lines at the supermarket. And everyone was automatically considered a member unless they declared otherwise. which is the U2 uploading that album to your iPhone, whether you like it or not, of political parties.
Do you know what? That is the organ donors equivalent in politics. You have an option to opt out.
Opt out, yeah.
Yes, you do. Before we get to my choice, we're quickly going to talk about two presidential candidates. Another ex-comedian, a guy called Pat Paulson. Pat Paulson was part of a musical double act called the Smother Brothers.
They were huge in the 60s and 70s.
They were. One of their signature lines is one said to the other, "Mom always liked you best," which I liked a lot. And he ran quite a few times for president. He ran against Bill Clinton and received 1% of the votes in New Hampshire, I believe. And then in 1992, he ran against George Bush in North Dakota, where he got 10,984 votes. My two favourite things for him is every time he was criticised, his response was just to go, "Picky, picky, picky." regular campaign slogan in the 60s was to go, "Now, I ask you, will I solve our economic problems? Will I ease the causes of racial tension? Will I bring a peaceful end to Vietnam? Sure, why not?" But my favourite presidential candidate, do you know about the general election of Liberia in 1927? Let me tell you about the most corrupt election of all time. You will be unsurprised to know that the chap who won it in the end, Charles D.B. King of the True Whig Party, who was re-elected for a third term, got an overwhelming number of votes. You know, like your Saddam Husseins, like your Colonel Gaddafi's. That's not the remarkable thing. The remarkable thing was the voter turnout, which clocked in at 1,660% of the electorate.
That is some Doctor Who shit right there.
That's like the first episode of Blackadder the Third.
Exactly, yeah. But we're going to talk about my selection that, listeners, we had to edit out a bit where Mark dropped the name, I said it's my selection, and he got giddy with excitement because we are going to Czechoslovakia in the 1910s and 1920s, and we're going to talk about the Party of Moderate Progress within the bounds of the law.
If you have to underline that within the bounds of the law bit, immediate red flag.
Oh, no, not a red flag. They are kind of serious, but kind of not.
It is an absolute satirical attack. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Jaroslav Hasek, for listeners who don't know, wrote two amazing books. One was The Good Soldier Schweik, and the other one was The Red Commissioner.
It's The Good Soldier Schweik is referenced by Richard Curtis and Ben Elton to do with Baldrick, I think.
Really?
Well. Yeah,
really?
It's a similar sort of like...
Well, Schweik, for those of you who don't know, Schweik was just this sort of like innocent who gets drafted in to the army as a conscript in the First World War, and just by following the exact letter of the insane command, because military commands are by their very nature insane, he would absolutely subvert and destroy whatever had gone on through going, "No, but I did what you said." And it was he's absolutely amazing. The Red Commissioner, again, is very, very similar. It's somebody who takes that idea of just following the letter of the law and the law being so absurd. And in fact, the Schweik is this sort of everyman character. It's often terms up in theatre. There's Schweik in the First World War. There's Bertolt Brecht did Schweik in the Second World War. Erwin Piscator is one of the early sort of like theatre directors, amazing sort of political, who really influenced Brecht. Got George Grosz as well to do the cartoons. George Grosz, the legendary cartoonist, and he would do these amazing cartoons. And so you'd have, and they became part of the set. Schweik has just been around forever. First of all, that's his credentials. So you've got good credentials from the word go. Then the fact that he held all his political rallies in pubs.
Yeah, back to our friends, the Polish Beer Party. Yeah. And they were great. And it's hard to know whether he was a political party or they were an anarchist group. And people going, is this art? Is this politics?
Yeah, it's nearly art movement.
Yeah, and it was literally in Bohemia as well. Yeah. So, he's really leaning into his nationality. And it was almost like Lewis Carroll, Edward Lear-esque, some of the things he said. So I've got a lovely little thing here. When he introduced the party ideology of moderate progress, he said, "The Svatopluk Czech Bridge was not built overnight. First, Svatopluk Czech had to be born, become a famous poet, die. Then there had to be an urban renewal. And only then was the Svatopluk Czech Bridge built." I've talked about joke candidates. This is the best joke manifesto that I've ever heard. So this was for a candidate, I know, 7 points. And number one, the reintroduction of slavery. Number two, the nationalisation of janitors. Similar to how it is in Russia, where every janitor is simultaneously a police informer. Number three, the rehabilitation of animals. Number four, the institutionalisation of feeble-minded MPs. Number five, the reintroduction of the Inquisition. Number six, judicial immunity for priests in the church in cases where a schoolgirl is deflowered by a priest. And last of all, the mandatory introduction of alcoholism.
Genius.
Yeah. And, you know, loads of professionals, doctors, lawyers flocked to him. Obviously, all the artists did. Who turned up at some of the readings? Max Brod and Franz Kafka. So these are the sort of circles that he is moving in.
But this would be the wrong thing to say. But he was the sort of Czechoslovakian equivalent of Tristan Zara, who was the founder of the Dadaist movement post-World War One. And that was in Zurich. So all these people came to him. He was the catalyst for a whole load of other stuff.
Yeah, like honestly, some of the political campaign slogans, they feel like they've been written by Simon Munnery. They've got that sort of vibe to them. So he would go around handing out pamphlets and placards that would say things like, voters, use your ballot to protest against the earthquake in Mexico. Or my favourite one, each of our voters will receive a small pocket aquarium. and then advertising for candidates wanted a respectable man to defame opposing candidates, which feels like an advert for the current Tory party leadership campaign.
Yeah.
And so he would run. And this was still during when the Habsburgs were in charge. So political parties were not really that powerful, but it sort of feels like he empowered them further.
What I love is the attitude that you go, okay, this is the structure, I'm completely excluded from it, I will therefore find a way into it.
Yes, 100%.
There are a whole load of political parties that you can go to. You mentioned the Monster Raving Loony Party. The Monster Raving Lunar Party is slightly different. Yeah.
They fight for the right of werewolves.
No,
I think.
They only organise once a month. Yeah. But the thing is, the guy who inspired Lord Such was a bloke who stood, who would stand continually in Streatham, and he stood for road safety. And he had a little bike and some banners and some madness that would go around. And that would be him. And he had to do it. It was a compulsiveness to him. Like in the way that there was a lovely bloke. I'm trying frantically to remember his name. I talked about him on stage recently. He was an amazing bloke who used to walk around Oxford Street, all around sort of like the West End. And he would have a sign and it was just like, eat less protein for less lust. And he would say, no nuts, fish, milk, dairy, meat. He would have pamphlets that you could buy, and there's a little coin, you could put money in his little coin box. And he lived in a hostel. Every day he would go round, eat less protein. He was the protein man. His banner is now in the Museum of London. Stanley is his first name. And he was amazing. There was nothing he could do to stop himself doing that. He had to be
like
there.
Like a single issue Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Except with less energy and protein.
Yeah.
do you know what I mean? I remember once, it was the day that the poll tax riots happened in Trafalgar Square. I was there with mates and it was just like, ooh. And I'd got a gig on the Red Rose, that club, which is a club up in Finsbury Park, and I got on the, I was going, trying to get to the tube. I was walking out, there's police clattering everywhere, there's stuff being chucked at them, there's people on horseback, and I'm walking up towards Leicester Square Tube. The skip is on fire, do you know what I mean? In the middle of the road, burning, and just black acrid smoke, and screams and shouts, and just from behind the skip comes this, eat less protein. He was still there.
The commitment to the bit is beautiful. Yeah.
But I love that about,
you
know, the fact that they had to do it. And so there's something brilliant, and there's something brilliant about the Monster Raving Loony Party, because you're right, they do have occasionally kind of like a thing where you go, oh my God.
Yeah, what is that?
That's amazing.
Them and Count Binface, and they're sort of like laying the path for people like Steve Bray, for our non-British listeners, who is an anti-Brexit campaigner who has been just legislated against by a government. All he does is stand outside the Houses of Parliament
with a megaphone saying no Brexit.
Yeah, please. Exactly.
Look, the thing about these things, and I think this is really important, is when you see Lord Sutch standing there in his leopard skin thing and his top hat, you know, hey, vote monster raving loony, and he's behind Margaret Thatcher, right? And she's just won this landslide election. He is the memento mori. That her career will end. That politics always ends in failure. And whatever you do, there's some person behind you going, yeah, bollocks.
Yeah.
And that is an absolute, that's a piece of genius in itself.
And so important for democracy to see those candidates.
Well, absolutely right. Originally, they used to have, Caesar used to have a laurel bearer that would stand behind Caesar when he was being paraded through town with a set of laurels. And behind Caesar, he'd just go, you're only mortal. This will soon end in dust. And I kind of like, you know, I like that. I've always wanted Les Dawson to be the laurel bearer, right? I've always thought...
The voice of your social anxiety.
Yeah. he'd just be like, just shit. But the point is about it, is that those moments are kind of reminders that also, you know, that other great quote, which is, you know, the truth is written on a toilet door. The last bastion of freedom of speech will be a toilet door. And that somehow that's entwined within people like Lord Sutch who arrive there and just go, hey, I've dropped me trousers. You know, that somehow that they're actually the laughter and the ridicule and the sneering that will happen to your grandiose plans will always be there. And I love that.
Yeah, it's great. And it's the fool in Lear as well, isn't it? That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly that.
Just to let you know what happened to this party, because sometimes on this podcast we get worse that we're like, they are either morally terrible or a bit bungling, but clearly we love these guys.
Mm. Heroic failure.
Heroic failures, yeah. But they, when they actually ran for office in the Vinohrady district, there were 3,000 votes cast in total. Only 38 were for this party, or possibly even as few as 16. My favourite bit about it is that it was reported in a newspaper, the candidate intends to protest. However, when they went to protest, it turned out that the party hadn't even officially registered its candidacy. So it's all taken the piss out of the entire system and the entire democracy and the entire notion of parties. And he's and the interesting thing with Hasek is the how it ended for him, because he, after being this great sort of playful, mischievous character, he ended up joining the Red Army, and he ended up being a commissioner out in Siberia. Quite a few members of sort of his anarchist, Dadaist background felt a bit betrayed by him in the end for who he'd gone to work for. I mean, obviously, we couldn't know, you wouldn't know in 1918 how the Bolshevik Revolution was going to play out and all the millions that would end up being killed by it. But it's a really strange end. I imagine these guys, it's the equivalent of Dylan going electric and then going on to make prog rock.
Yeah.
If you look at the political parties within the UK, obviously you've got your Lord Sutches.
And just for our, again, we have mentioned Monster Raving Loony a few times. And we have talked about them in a past podcast, but they're the sort of party you have policies like any immigrant coming to the UK called Ronnie has to arrive with a second Ronnie. So they are the two Ronnies. And a proposal for the United Kingdom to reduce its national debt by selling its castles back to France. With its tagline is Vote for Insanity.
It's so that's great. The sort of they're fun.
Yeah.
But people forget the Natural Law Party.
Mm.
Do you remember the Natural Law Party?
Yeah.
Who really took themselves seriously and could have yogic flying.
Yeah.
Do you remember they thought they could fly?
Yeah.
One of my earliest memories. So my earliest memory is all watching television in my mum and dad's bedroom, and it's 88 Olympics, fall of the Berlin Wall, and then a party political broadcast for the Natural Law Party in the 1992 election, who were backed by George Harrison.
He
funded them.
And this is the insanity of the Natural Law Party.
They'd have fallen out with the loonies, because the loonies also in 2015 proposed scrapping all public transport in favour of magic carpets. Now, the Natural Law Party would say we didn't need the carpets.
Well, you see, there was also another split, which is part of the yogic flying, went on to form Ryanair. But, you know, it was... they were just a fantastically mad group. looking across that spectrum, there are some amazing candidates. There are some amazing campaigns. Jello Biafra was the lead singer of the Dead Kennedys. The Dead Kennedys were America's great punk band. They were in San Francisco. They were an amazing band. The two big singles were California Uber Arles and Holiday in Cambodia. They Jello Biafra, who as well as the Dead Kennedys would take to court. Do you remember the tipper stickers? Tipper Gore, who was Al Gore's wife, wore out the tipper sticker, which was the warning that, you know, this could have obscene messages on it. Or this
was just
music.
A parental advisory.
Yes, it was a tipper sticker, right? And she brought it in, and, you know, it was all that time of play the record backwards, and it will say, you know, the word, the devil will speak to you.
Yeah.
Which just fucked up a lot of record players and styluses. But the thing about it was, they wouldn't go after the big groups. They wouldn't go after, the law came in and about corrupting minors. And they went after the Dead Kennedys, who were this DIY punk band who had their own label and would encourage other, you know, punk bands to come forward. They went after them because they had a poster inside one of their albums, which was a piece of artwork which involved men's penises, right? So the court case, they go after them. They can't show the artwork. So they have it on the admissions table face down because there are minors in the courtroom, right? And they, if they showed them, then they, obviously that would be it. You know, so anyway, the Dead Kennedys just wind them up. They go in the witness box, just wind up. So eventually the prosecutor's like, this is the filth! This is the filth! Holding up the poster, thus exposing it to minors. At which point the judge went, case dismissed. they're a remarkable band. Anyway, Jello Biafra stood as mayor of San Francisco.
Great.
So he's someone, he had a, I mean, he was always going to lose, but it would be always his great. He fell out with the band. And he went doing a spoken word tour, and he did it around Europe on a Eurorail. He bought a Eurorail card and just went around doing his gigs.
An interrailing speaking tour.
Yeah. An interrail gig. And then he did, at the end of the gig, he'd just leave a shoe on stage and ask you to fill it to pay for his hotel for that night. Huh. And it was just like, genius.
Yeah.
Absolute genius. So he would go down in one of my favourites. The Natural Law Party would go down as one of my worst. I actually stood for election in 1996, I want to say.
Wow, that means, Barry, you're the only person in this room who hasn't stood for election.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but it is interesting. I was going to say, thing, you know,
mate.
I know. Have you even lived? If you've not stood for election,
yeah. I feel like we're in a Punch cartoon, yeah. All staring at you. The only man not to have stood for election.
But it is often the case that, you know, if you're a political comedian or a campaigner, people often go, why don't you put your money where your mouth is and stand? And you,
well, no, mine was a joke. Obviously, it was the Mark Thomas Channel 4 9 o'clock party, and. And which was the time of the first show.
Yeah.
And what we did was we stood in Hemsworth, and it was during the by-election. It was just at that horrible new Labour stage.
So the Tories were still in power. There's a lot of conservative sleaze at this point as well. It's the dying days of the Tory party and the Labour party.
And also this was the coal fields that were now wasteland.
Yeah.
And we found out that basically if you got a manifesto printed up by law, the Royal Mail have to deliver it to every household in the constituency. And it was like, we're off. At the time, Yorkshire Water, which was the water company, were in trouble because they had just privatized the water and they'd given themselves all a bonus and they hadn't fixed the leaks. So we were having a drought.
Imagine that on this of all days.
No. Yeah. In March, we were having a drought because they hadn't fixed the leaks and all the water was just draining out. They ended up in the summer with the threat of standpipes being introduced into the streets while they got all their dividends. So my number one policy was, if elected by law, I will make all directors, executive and non-executive, directors of Yorkshire Water donate a minimum of one kidney to charity. So we then had all this stuff. One of the proposals that we would turn Hemsworth into the kung fu film capital of Europe. And that we would have a kung fu film festival and that I would bring Jackie Chan over to open it. And it was just because they had one multiplex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, we'll bring you a proper cinema and a kung fu festival. and what was great was you'd go around campaigning and you'd go around going, all right there, and you go, all right, I got your manifesto, bloody funny were that, I laughed that, a bloody funny that were. I said, you're going to vote for it? Nope. But it was a lot of fun going campaigning. And Mike, one of my other slogans was, vote for me and I'll do whatever you want. All right. And so we went around touring, and then loads of little weird things that happened. Like Arthur Scargill was standing, who was the ex-miners union president who led the coal strike, led the miner strike, 84 to 85, and regarded by a hero, as many people, hated and vilified by people as well. So Arthur stood, but what he did was, he didn't stand, actually. He was the election agent for this other woman. So he, as the election agent, he gets to say whatever he wants to whoever he wants, but she is bound by electoral law. So she says something and you have to get everyone along and they all have to be in the same room and have an equal space. But Arthur could say whatever. But because he was just loved, I mean, he was just sort of, you'd get these miners who just wanted to be in the same room as him, ex-miners. Hmm. And so I remember seeing him thinking, this is not, they just wanted to be in the van. There was a campaign van and it would start out on the moor and you would see it right out on the moor and it would just be, we will actually index link the pension towards the retail price index. And it will come in. We will pay for this with the abolition of nuclear weapons. We will get rid of Trident. We will introduce a living wage. And it got louder and louder. And it came into the center of Hemsworth, this small town. So you'd hear it coming in. Like, you know, it was like the sort of ice cream van. You'd hear the jingles miles away. And then it would come into the center of town. And the place would just be packed. The van would be packed with all these ex-miners just happy to be in the van with Arthur, who is sitting in the front seat on the megaphone. Furthermore, we shall enter. And he would just carry on and they'd drive straight through town, carry on out, hit the other side of the moor, and he'd still be going, just doing this campaign speech to sheep. Just sort of, furthermore, we shall fight the class-based system. And he's just like, mate, you need to organise. Yeah. And it was a really weird old time, because the Labour Party candidate was just protected. A guy called John Trickett, who sort of turned out all right in the end, sort of. I remember him just going, I bumped into him and said, ah, John Trickett, and, oh, no, and just ran away from me. And it was like having kind of like sort of anti-climb paint on you, do you know what I mean, politically. Yeah. And he just ran away. He goes, carry on, Mark, carry on, trying to make a comedy out of the political process. It's like, mate, you're doing my job.
Yeah.
Come the election night, I think it was, well, there was some Nazi group there, and literally they got smuggled in, they stood on the stage, and then were smuggled out. But what was funny was you get to make a speech.
Yeah, all the candidates yeah, losing, everyone gets to make a speech. Yeah.
And because, you know, as a comic, you just go, right, I know how to do this. And so people coming up and gesturing, no, you go to the mic first. So I got headliner spot.
Of course.
Right? I got the headliner spot. John Trickett is now, who is elected, is now doing interviews. And I got 121 votes. I beat the Natural Law Party and the Nazis. That is good enough, right?
That's your bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, the 121 people who voted for me, you need to talk to people. But, you know, I got this. So I stood up there and just went, 121 votes. Tonight I stand before you in triumph. So it's just, and you could just really play with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And said, when I first came here, somebody said to me, we don't count the votes for Labour, we weigh them. Somebody said to me, we could stick a rosette on a lump of tripe and it will be elected. And that's what you've done. And it was great fun. It was just an enormous, you know, it was great fun to do. And I think there's that, I know you stood for the Green Party, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I did. Stood for the Greens in Camden.
You know, and it's fun. And getting out there and talking to people, it actually, the communication of it is genuinely fun. But what's interesting in all of this is when you go, what's the worst political parties? I think the worst political, obviously I'm going to think this, are the Nazis. They're just awful. They're just, you know, because they're Nazis.
Well, do you know what, Mark? The number of times the Nazis get nominated for things in the shows and we sort of overlook it because we think, oh, you know, it's an easy, you might win this episode. It might be the Nazis' time.
Seriously, if the Nazis don't get the worst political party, I am going to fucking do the pair of
yeah, that's fair. Oh, using Nazi intimidation tactics to win a vote. I see.
Mate, I'm sitting on my sofa in my pajamas. It's hardly bloody jackboots up the Rhine, is it?
Fair.
They have a lot to answer for, in fairness, the Nazis.
But also, but always, you see this, you saw the seeds of it. UKIP was standing, right? This is in 96, the United Kingdom Independence Party, walking around pretending they were a serious political party. You know, you had the Nazis, which always try and stand, you know, you always got some vision of them trying to make a political inroad. There is always a part of the Nazi party in this country, or Nazis rather than the Nazi party, who will go, what we have to do is mobilize the street and attack the left. We have to build a street force, which is what the EDL was. And then you get those like Griffin who just go, right, we're going to question time.
Yeah, this is the leader of the British Nationalist Party, BNP. Yeah.
He was there on question time, and it was kind of like he wanted to be taken seriously as a political force. Eugene Terreblanche, who again was another Nazi who stood in South Africa when apartheid was being abolished. I've forgotten the exact Afrikaans name for it, but he was like, you know, the whites must keep apartheid. They had a militaristic, they had a paramilitary uniform.
His surname was Terreblanche.
Yeah.
He was sound me, Mark.
What was great was that the initials for his political party was the AWB. You're like, the average white man, what the hell are they doing? What are they doing?
Yeah, anyway. And after the election, they had to pick up the pieces. So,
but he would, there's actually a great documentary, because he would parade at his rallies on a horse like some great Boer leader, and he had this beard and went yeah, and every time he spoke sort of like half a ton of shrimp spit would come out of his mouth. They tried to do, I think it was in Lesotho, that because these guys, everyone thought that they were kind of like, oh my god, we've got to be careful, they're going to start a white terror war. A load of them drove to Lesotho where they were having some kind of election. It was kind of some, you know, there was something going on. I've forgotten exactly what it was. Lesotho was supposedly a Bantu state, so a state within South Africa that was given sort of like, you can have a little bit of democracy just in this tiny bit because you're independent. But it's essentially run by South Africa, right? Anyway, the AWB diehards got these vans and trucks and they drove up to Lesotho, which is a plateau kingdom. So they drove up to impose order and put the white order, to put the blacks in place. And they were stopped by the Lesotho police. And on camera, the Lesotho police shot the AWB. And it was, and they were begging for their life at one point, and because they wouldn't stop the cars. So they shot them. And it was kind of like, they just vanished. As soon as somebody actually stood up to them, they vanished. And it was a remarkable thing. So Eugene Terreblanche would be there because he was such a, if you just saw him, he was just like, it was like, the, if ever there was kind of, and the Ozymandias Award this year goes to, do you know what I mean? It was sort of like, that was him.
The thing with the Nazis, I think of them, it's because when I was reading about one of the political parties in my selection, it talked about one of their first meetings, there was only 8 people there. And that's what I always think about the Nazis when they first started out. They were a joke party. They were extreme right wing, but they were a nothing party, and it took Hitler to organize them. And I think of Nazism as sort of it's a glitch in humanity. You won't ever get rid of it. You won't ever get rid of it. It's a thing that it'll constantly pop up, and it will be extreme right wing, it will be cowardly, and it'll be vicious, and it will never
almost always punch down. I think it's always the defining thing of a lot of these right-wing things. It's always who's the wedge group we can wedge against, and it'll be immigrants, it'll be Jews, it'll be the Irish, it'll be trans people, seems to be the flavour of the month for them at the moment. And it always is like, they're like the most noxious moths to the most virulent flame possible. Just like, what's the issue we can all gather around? It's always the people with money going, no, look at someone else, not us.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. There is an amazing thing that actually you can see in this country, which is, well, Boris Johnson is a populist, so he just appeals to the basest sort of instincts, and they encourage the normalization of cruelty. That's what they do. They encourage the normalization of cruelty. You know, you end up with idiots trying to stop a lifeboat going to sail to save people, and they're stopped because they're saying, you're bringing in asylum seekers and migrants. So idiots blocking a lifeboat launching. And you just think, where do you stop at this? Do you run into surgery and check, go, where's your nationality? Where's your papers? Where do you stop at this? And the thing about Johnson was that sometimes when a populist and popular opinion shifts, then a populist has nowhere to go. So during the take the knee thing.
Yeah, the Colin Kaepernick movement in America came to here. Yeah. The English football team during the Euro Championship started doing it.
Everyone took the knee and everyone clapped and cheered. I've heard a couple of boos. And the people who boo people taking a knee always look like if they took the knee, they'd have trouble getting back up again. Yeah. But the point being is when Boris Johnson and Priti Patel said, you know, did that thing about, well, people have got the right to boo the English team. The tide had gone out, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're left exposed. People go, well, no, you can't boo an English team in the Euros. What are you talking about?
You got to look at Boris Johnson's approval ratings versus the English football team's approval ratings at the time. And it didn't look good for Boris.
You know,
so
that's
comparison.
The thing is, yeah. Populists and right-wingers can only try and echo those bases fear. And when we shift, when the populace shifts, then actually that's when they're in trouble. When empathy starts to rear and reassert itself, which is naturally there. That's how human beings behave. You know, I find that that's the exciting moment. I've wandered off the subject of political parties.
No, but I think it's relevant to the particular, like you say, Nazism is based on that idea of cruelty and that lack of empathy and finding the people to blame and scapegoat.
I also have to say one of the best campaigns ever is the Rick Santorum campaign.
As in to redefine what Santorum
meant as a word.
Yes.
That is just the best campaign. Rick Santorum was one of these evil sort of homophobes.
Ran for president a couple of times in America.
And what happened was, I think it was a gay writer in San Francisco, a journalist in San Francisco, ran a poll for what the word Santorum should mean. And the winner was Santorum, the mixture of lube and excrement one finds after anal sex.
Yeah. It might even have been Dan Savage. I'm not sure if that's right, but yeah. And the Streisand effect thing is people start Googling it, and then it's the Santorum campaign complains about it. It just grows more attention.
Oh, but you know what it's like when you get a bit of Santorum runs down. Yeah. Your leg. Oh, mate.
Santorum's running again. Not that way.
Yeah. That was the inspiration behind our Farage campaign, to find a word for Farage, right? And we ran this as part of our campaign. It was to find to define a meaning for Farage. So Nigel Farage, nasty, right-wing, evil piece of shite. The winning vote was the liquid waste at the bottom of a garbage bin.
Oh, yeah.
Farage.
Because bin juice doesn't really do
bin
it justice.
Bin juice is a hyphenated word. It's not proper word.
Needs a single word.
So you need a Farage.
Right, Susie Dent.
I won't have it. Farage is the only word that actually means bin juice.
I love that both Santorum and Farage got reduced to their liquid forms. And also, they sound like the worst aristocratic couple. Have you met the Santorum Farages?
Yeah. We've made a very politically beneficial marriage. Yes.
The problem with them as a political party is they leak all the time.
What is the third oldest existing party in the United States that's still active? You've got the Republicans and the Democrats, obviously. Do you know what the third one that's still going
is? Is it the Prohibition Party?
The Prohibition Party is still going in the United States.
How fantastic.
The last time it received over 10,000 votes in the presidential election was 1976. They had a candidate ran in 2020 called Phil Collins of Nevada, which I find fascinating. Where the home of Las Vegas, they have the Prohibition
it's like
Party.
Pop culture has collided.
Yeah. And he got 4,834 votes. They're on the more benevolent end of right wing. They're sort of non-interventionist foreign policy. They encourage human rights consideration in work and trade and immigration and stuff, but they're also anti-union and...
No.
I know. Human rights considerations, but no union. Yeah. It seems an odd mix. But yeah, they're still going strong.
That's a really good little fact there.
Yeah, 160 years old they are nearly. And the USA has a really interesting single issue party. Fans of Saturday Night Live might remember Jimmy McMillan being a regular character played by Kenan Thompson. He ran on one single issue, the rent is too damn high party.
Yes.
And the rent in New York City is too damn high. That was his mission, to just bring that to the masses. He ran as the gubernatorial candidate for New York in 2010, and he got more than 40,000 votes.
Great.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Central Europe. The Two-Tailed Dog Party, the Hungarian Two-Tailed Dog Party, founded in 2006. And their main activity is street art. They do graffiti of their number one political candidate, who is István Nagy, a two-tailed dog with a little tie on.
Adorable.
With his slogan, which is, he's so cute, surely he isn't going to steal. Which is a very nice little comment on politics. And their party apparently on very good terms with another party, the Fourth Way, which is led by two birds. There's a disagreement between these two drug parties because the Fourth Way plans to abolish bird flu and the Two-Tailed Dog Party says, no, 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 that's a violation of viral rights.
Genius.
Yeah. One more. We mentioned the punks earlier on. The Anarchistic Pogo Party, Germany's weirdest political party, created in 1981 by two punks in Hanover, two 17-year-olds with the nicknames Zeva, which is a type of paper towel brand, and Kotz, which is vomit in German. So Lou Roland Vomit formed this party, and some of their policies involved the right to unemployment with full salary, universal basic income,
great.
Its time has come, a youth pension instead of a retirement pension.
That's a great idea.
Party first, work later is their
approach. That's a genius idea. That's what you should do.
Yeah. Abolition of the police, legalization of all drugs. A lot of the stuff is really on the, what we'd say, the progressive end of politics at the moment. They also, their leading visionary is a gorilla. They have posters of him all the time. And their logo on their website, which I visited yesterday, is a swastika made of bananas. Or a replica of the Baader-Meinhof Group's logo, the red star with a banana in the shape of a gun instead. And one of my favourite policies of theirs, they suggest that there should be... they should create centres for physical love, which would be called Mitfixzentralen, which literally means fuck-pooling centres.
Oh my God.
I've just remembered one thing, because I did a thing called the Manifesto, which is where you go around and you ask people to come up with their policies to change the world. You write it on a bit of paper and you discuss it with the audience. I toured that for ages and it was great fun. And we actually did a manifesto book where we came up with 50 policies. And what happened was we actually stood someone in one of the Bristol by-elections, and they stood as a candidate. And this guy is a great guy. He worked for a drug legalization charity. And they were just brilliant because they're just like, and he knows drugs inside out, right? All the arguments, all the facts, all the things, everything. So basically, when they did the hustings for anything, he would be asked along. And he knew his stuff inside out on drugs. So everyone, he would put forward that this was his main thing and raise the issue of abolition, or decriminalization rather, of drugs. And he would be able to argue with anyone about every single aspect of it. He was brilliant. And I said to him, how's it going? He said, it's really good. He said, I just hit my thing that I want to do. And any other question, I turn to the manifesto and go, well, this is what our policy says. And read out from the manifesto. Yeah. Some of the ideas we had in manifesto were, anyone found guilty of a homophobic hate crime should serve their entire sentence in drag. Anyone who doesn't pick up after their dog should be forced to wear the offending turd as a moustache for the rest of the day. But the one thing I wanted to tell you about was, we're there at the count and there's a whole load of thing about disputed ballots, because if people don't put it might be a tick or a cross or whatever, or a mark, does it count? And one bloke, and it was a bloke, had written one letter in every box, and it was just pricks. Pricks. But he hadn't put it in our box. And we argued that that was a that meant that it was our, but we lost.
I'm going to give you my candidate for the worst political party. We have mentioned them on the show before. It is the Rhinoceros Party of Canada, founded in the 60s, and the named for a Brazilian rhinoceros called Cacareco, who was elected as a member of Sao Paulo City Council in 1958 as a protest candidate. And we've mentioned him on the podcast as well before. The leader of the Rhinoceros Party was a rhino that was in Quebec Zoo called Cornelius the First. The reason they named themselves the Rhinoceros Party was because they thought it was an appropriate symbol for politicians, because they are thick-skinned, slow-moving, dim-witted, can move fast as hell when in danger, and have large hairy horns growing out of the middle of their faces.
Great. Do you know who we have forgotten, though? Angus the monkey.
Oh, yeah, he was the one that ran in Hartlepool, is
he
that right?
He ran for mayor in Hartlepool.
Oh, great.
And won.
Yeah, because there was a local story about the people of Hartlepool hanging a monkey back in the 1700s or something like that.
What the story was that during the Napoleonic Wars, such was the propaganda and hatred fed about the French, there's a shipwreck off the coast of Hartlepool, and the only surviving thing on it was a monkey, and they thought it was a Frenchman, and they dressed it in a French soldier's uniform and hung it, and it was known as the Hartlepool monkey. It became an insult, you know, it's all football.
Yeah, we call them monkey hangers.
Yeah, all of that. But what happened was this guy became their football mascot, right? And so that's the Angus the monkey is the mascot for the team. Hartley Paul away, what a bloody vision. Anyway, the point being is he stood for mayoral election and won.
Yeah. Love it.
And at the count, he took the mask off and said, no, it's me. I've won. I'm not Angus the monkey. He literally ripped up his manifesto and exposed himself as and he tried to do it seriously and took advice from Peter Mandelson. But the turnaround was literally at the speeches.
Yeah.
as he pulled his mask off, he should have gone, I would have got away with it if it wasn't the pesky kid.
The pesky electorate. Yeah.
Love him. He's the boaty boat face of electoral candidates.
Just some of the Rhino Party's policies before I finish up with them. They call themselves Marxist-Leninists, as in Groucho Marx and John Lennon. One of their candidates, Stardust the Magician, promised to put a roof on the Olympic Stadium using only a $25 million handkerchief. They proposed repealing the law of gravity, providing higher education by building taller schools, and they're counting the Thousand Islands to make sure the Americans don't steal any. Their manifesto at the moment says that national defense is the number one priority, the economy is the number one priority, education is the number one priority, unemployment is the number one priority. I really like them, so I've picked them they're still going as a joke party, but one of those with, you know, a good sense of humor about themselves, but also some good ideas as well. So our candidates this week for the world's worst political party are Ben's suggestion of the Party of Moderate Progress within the Bounds of the Law, led by Jaroslav Hasek, Mark's suggestion of literal Nazis, and my suggestion of the Rhinoceros Party of Canada. And I don't know, I think the Nazis' time may have come on this podcast.
It's an open and shut case, isn't it?
It's an open and shut case. We love the Moderate Progress Party, we love the Rhinoceros Party, but if the
literal bastards.
If they don't win the episode that is literally their wheelhouse, we're not doing our job properly. So congratulations, Mark.
Thank you very much. I accept this award.
On behalf of Nazis everywhere. Yeah.
We got him. We got him. Case closed.
It's not just for me. It's for all the casual racists. The people behind the scenes, the banner makers, the armband makers.
The art department. Before we go, I've got to give you some good news this week, and this comes from England. An English family was stunned when their dog ran away recently. Peter and Paula Closier were very worried. Their five-year-old beagle mix vanished, and they called the police and the dog ward, and they looked all over their house in West Sussex, and the neighbours were helping, looking for Bonnie the dog, but there was no sign. Until a chap called John Wilmer found Bonnie by the side of the road while on his way to a dog show in Surrey, where he was entering his own two dogs. And John brought the dog along with him, Bonnie, and Bonnie won a rosette.
Yes!
And then John posted about this on Facebook, and a friend of the Closier saw it, and Bonnie was returned completely intact, but with a little rosette on her chest as well.
That is unbearably sweet.
And she's now running for election.
Bonnie has in fact turned out to be a Nazi.
It was a yellow rosette. She could be a Lib Dem.
Oh, all we know. No.
The worst of the worst.
Well, they're Lib Dems are dreadful because they're the ones that collaborate with the Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. Before we go, Mark, you've got Edinburgh and tour stuff to promote, I believe.
That's it.
Where can people find all about that?
On the website.
Which is?
MarkThomasInfo.co.uk.
Yeah, go on, you lazy bastards. You don't need Mark to tell you everything. No, go look it up yourself.
Look, I'm touring. I'm doing stuff. It's a really good show. It's all about where we are at the moment and just about what I love is celebrating being in the same room again.
Mm, yeah.
It's just brilliant to be in the same room and play. The other night, I got everyone to... I taught them the chorus of The Boy I Love Is Up in the Gallery. It's an old Mary Lloyd song. And sung that. So I'd sing the verse and they'd all join in on the chorus, which is just beautiful. And actually, it's a lovely song. And you just think, we just want to be together again. And just it's like this brilliant little thing of just interacting, being in the same room, playing, fucking about. All these people I've heard lots of talk about, you know, audiences are very unruly these days, and people have been shouting, it's good, it's joining in. You don't regard heckles as heckles. It's part of the process of this conversation that's happening out there. You know, I love it.
So you've heard it there, folks. Go see Mark and shout at him in Edinburgh or on tour.
You're very welcome you're very to shout welcome at me, but it. You better have a very good second and third shout.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I guess given you two have stood for election already, it's time to dress me up as a pine marten and stand me for election in Hartlepool or adjacent counties. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.